Carlo, I want to thank you for calling in from Tashkent, Uzbekistan. Human Rights Watch Central Asia researcher for human rights, and Edward Lemon, postdoctoral fellow at the Harriman Institute at Columbia University. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is accepting applications for our paid six-month internships. Application date, November 15th. For more, go to democracynow.org. I'll be speaking at the Buffalo Convention Center in New York on Friday. You can check our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gattesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's 7:59. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up, Voices from the Edge, guest host Kerry Waters, with a look at the demise of Columbus Day and the rise of Indigenous Peoples Day. This is KBOO. It's 8 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Muertos PDX 9th annual Dia de los Muertos celebration on November 2nd at noon at Adios Cinema in Portland. Muertos PDX will be hosting its annual Dia de los Muertos celebration with musical performances, a children's story time, calavera decorating stations, mariachi, Katrina's traditional Mexican cuisine, and much more. A portion of this year's proceeds will benefit Oregon por Mexico for earthquake relief in Mexico. Again, that's Muertos PDX 9th annual Dia de los Muertos celebration on November 2nd at noon at Adios Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under community events.
Let me tell you the story of a soldier named Dan.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Art of the Protest Song, Sunday, November 12th at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society in Portland. The Art of the Protest Song partners the Oregon Historical Society with four local folk musicians to present a showcase of popular and topical protest songs from the Kennedy era, as well as original songs focused on contemporary issues. This event is free and open to the public. Again, that's the Art of the Protest Song, Sunday, November 12th at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society, 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Faces without hope and without homes. And the guns they grow.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of KBOO at the Clinton screening of Romeo is Bleeding on Thursday, November 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Romeo is Bleeding is a documentary that follows Dante Clark, a young poet transcending the violence in his hometown of Richmond, California, by writing about his experiences. Dante and the like-minded youth of the city mount an urban adaptation of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, with the hope of starting a dialogue about violence in the city. PDX Poetic Justice's John Slaughter and his group of poets will be reading some of their works before the screening. Again, that's KBOO at the Clinton screening of Romeo is Bleeding on Thursday, November 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8:03 a.m., and you are here for a special edition of Voices from the Edge. I'm Kerry Waters.
And I'm Amory Shack.
And you are tuned in to Voices from the Edge with a focus on Native voices and cross-cultural allies to Indigenous peoples for the entire month of November. We've got some great content coming at you today and for the next four additional Thursdays of this month. We know we've got big shoes to fill, so we will do our best to stay true to the heart of this amazing program.
And we'll have interviews with some local leaders who hold unique perspectives on the state of the Portland metro area. And we'll also get a chance to highlight exciting projects and also hear about the happenings across Indian Country.
Amory, could you please ground our listeners both in your background and perhaps share some of your perspectives on monthly celebrations like Native American Heritage Month?
Absolutely. I'm a descendant from the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes in Oklahoma, and I've spent most of my life in Oklahoma. And, you know, to be honest, I don't really feel like we had any sort of relevance for the month of November for Native American Heritage Month. Growing up in a place where, you know, our license plates say Native America, there was never really a resonance in our community. And so I feel like monthly celebrations are a newer phenomenon where, you know, I don't remember celebrating it. You know, my school's growing up, and I feel like they can tend to be this quick blip on the calendar to tokenize a community for a day, week, or month. It's kind of how I feel.
That's fair. So for myself, as a member of the Tlingit tribe, I know myself as a visitor to this specific place. And that's how I try to hold myself as a community member within the Portland urban Indian community, knowing that I want to better ground myself in the wisdom and the vision of the Chinook bands and others that have called this place home since time immemorial. So I enjoy opportunities like month-long celebrations of heritage as a good reason to perhaps do a deep dive on some issues that don't often come up in the mainstream discourse throughout the rest of the year, with the hopes that some folks may discover parts of history, as well as our current cultural presence and relevance, that may spark a moment of inspiration for them to better ground themselves in the stories, strengths, and struggles of those that have called this place home for far longer than we have.
Yeah. And I think there's also, in the Portland area, so many events and communities that are, you know, throughout this month of November, too, that are having good conversations. Mm-hmm. And it is key to tune into those.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So now may be a good time for us to transition into our first segment that we have to share with you to kick off our month of programming here from Native Voices from the Edge. So Native American Heritage Month comes on the heels of Indigenous Peoples Day, known to some still as Columbus Day, the second Tuesday in the month of October. The momentum built both here in Portland when the city officially made the holiday name change in 2015, as well as across the nation in other places like Los Angeles this past year, has, in my perspective, only taken place due to transformative cross-cultural communication and building of understanding across differences.
So Jackie Keeler, a local member of our Native community, is a writer and activist of Diné and Yankton Dakota heritage. Her podcast, I'm Not Your Disappearing Indian, was pre-recorded and can be found on SoundCloud and iTunes. Here's Jackie interviewing fellow Diné leader from Los Angeles, Chrissy Castro, less than a month ago.
Well, I'm an Italian, but I'm actually an Indigenous Italian. I'm Sardinian. And he's one in many millions of Italians are Sardinian. I'm 100% Sardinian, indigenous. Listen, the Italians did a lot for this country. We don't know much about what Christopher Columbus did to the people. I'm sure he wasn't a bad guy. Wait a minute! Shut your mouth!
No, wait. I respect what you say, but I'm the one who runs this meeting. Like it or not, please let him speak. Go ahead.
We've got a lot for this country, and I think everybody knows that every time they eat spaghetti. Okay, so why don't you stop picking on Christopher Columbus as though you're picking on our people? We never hurt you. We never wanted to hurt you. We embraced you. We taught you a lot of things about our cooking, about our songs. So why don't you just stop it with the anti-Italian stuff that you're coming up with? It doesn't hold water. We meant the best in the whole wide world for you, and we meant the best in the whole wide world for everybody. Italians brought a lot to this country. We brought families that were respected.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Jacqueline Keeler. I'm your host for Not Your Disappearing Indian, a new podcast about all the ways Native people are not going away and how America's got us all wrong.
So we are here today after centuries seeking justice. And so I stand today in full support of the resolution to eliminate Columbus Day.
In this episode, we're talking to Chrissy Castro, a citizen of the Navajo Nation, who will tell us how a coalition of indigenous activists, organizations, and allies convinced the city of Los Angeles, the second largest in the U.S., to drop Columbus Day and celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day instead. Much thanks to March and Rally Los Angeles for use of their audio from the LA City Council meeting, where the decision was made to say goodbye to Columbus, which you can hear right now. In part two of the show, we will hear from two Native women in Cleveland, Ohio, who want to pursue a conversation with the Italian-American community in a city defined by the most egregious mascot in professional sports, Chief Wahoo.
It was basically about a 22-month process, and I really feel that it was necessary for both an inside and an outside strategy. So inside, we had the city council member, Mitchell Farrell, a member of the Wyandotte Nation, who was championing this amongst his colleagues. And, basically the community went through a very robust community mobilization process throughout the almost 2 years. We showed up at every hearing, to testify. We had an intergenerational coalition of community members. A number of organizations formed together to create a coalition. That coalition included Indigenous peoples from the North and the South, which is the first time that ever happened in our community that I'm aware of anyways. So there was a lot of pushback from members of the Italian American community, as well as from one of the Italian American council members, whose name is Joe Buscaino. The Italian community that came out in opposition, Knights of the Columbus, the Italo Federation of Southern California, and others, they were vehemently opposed because they felt that this was an attack on Italian Americans. They felt that they had, as coming to this country as immigrants, they had been deeply discriminated against. And so they kept saying things like, why would you treat us the way you don't want to be treated? And I really think there was just such a lack of understanding about who Native people are. And, when we came together, the LA City Human Relations Commission convened a meeting. It's about a three-hour meeting. And they invited members of both of our communities that were involved in this whole engagement to talk about what this meant for us, what this change meant for us. And it was a very emotional day.
Columbus is on trial because of slavery and genocide that is associated with him and everything that has happened in the Americas since he came in 500 years ago. The reality is that if we look at that and we only base the holiday on what was happening 500 years ago, even thousands, slavery existed 11,000 years ago, even further. We don't condone it. Since we had a civil war, we put that to rest in our country. But the fact is, even the Native Americans, the indigenous people, ancient civilizations have engaged in slavery. And genocide is because of the disease that came.
Thank you.
And at the end of the meeting, after, we had an intergenerational group there. We had mothers with babies in their arms. We had grandmothers. We had college students. We had parents. We had, all across the spectrum, just very wide, diverse, members of our community. And on their side, they mostly had people that were of the same generation. I would say people in, 50s and later, probably 60s and 70s for the majority. And even then, after they heard why Columbus was a re-traumatization of our history, after we basically explained the impacts, not only of the past, but on how our children receive this holiday today, the majority of the people that showed up on the opposition, we changed their hearts. They came up to us after the meeting and they apologized to us. And they said, we don't want to be associated with that. We did not know that you felt this way about Christopher Columbus. And so it was this huge educational opportunity, not only with members that were originally in opposition that I think at least neutralized and stopped fighting it. I mean, there was a small faction that held on very firmly, but it was also an opportunity for us to educate our policymakers about, you know, who Indigenous peoples are in Los Angeles. And, you know, many of them had not ever, you know, met with us, heard from us, understood our community. And so, again, I think it was a big benefit to have them understand us and have us have a relationship with one another.
Yeah. These are members of the Italian American community who heard you, and
yes,
wow, they had not heard the other part of Christopher Columbus about what he had done before.
No, some of them did not, which I was shocked about.
It's just like here they have this whole thing celebrating him, yet they don't actually research him.
Right, they don't know. And the other thing that we heard the opposition, which was very disheartening to me, is that even after some of the members of the opposition, even after we would, you know, come after committee hearing to talk about all of the atrocities, you know, they never argued against any of his actions. You know, they never said he didn't do that. I mean, but what they would say was that he was an explorer, in quotes, and he was a, in quotes, man of his time. And he basically, everybody committed genocide, everybody committed, you know, was a believed in slavery, so you cannot judge him for, you know, the crimes that he committed during that time because they were acceptable. So it was a very odd argument. Ultimately the city council agreed with us, and you know, they would use coded wording like, you know, he ushered in the Colombian exchange of people and goods. So when they're called exchange of people, they're like, you mean slavery? You
know? It's worth remembering that Christopher Columbus, his conscience was not troubled by the taking and selling of slaves. Today we come here to remember that long, dark shadow of Christopher Columbus also reached to California. Before 1769, California had a native population of 350,000 people. After 60 or 70 years of colonization, 80,000 Indians had been baptized and 60,000 in the missions had died. 25,000 of those were children under the age of 10. Yet remarkably, in the midst of this catastrophe, Indigenous people of California and elsewhere built the city of Los Angeles. They moved here from impoverished regions of Mexico and worked with the government of Otomba to build the city of Los Angeles. But since its origins, Los Angeles has been a city of Indigenous people. Given the long history of suffering by Native peoples in the Americas, today we make a choice.
Thank you.
To remember Columbus or the Indigenous peoples who built Los Angeles. Thank you very much.
Actually, there's some group of Italian American academics as well as some activists that have formed a coalition, and they're petitioning the Italian members of Congress to meet with the Congressional Native Caucus, and they want to present a bill around the abolition of Columbus Day as a federal holiday. And they basically they just say that Columbus is not a good representation of Italian American people, and they don't want anything to do with it. And so, you know, while I can talk about the opposition, there was also equally, and then a lot of people gave them much more, you know, airtime, but there is also an organized base of Italian Americans that were for this change and want to see the repeal of the federal holiday.
Yeah, I'm standing here before you as a mother, as a grandmother, as a human being, that I'm asking for you for the reconciliation and the justice and the healing for our people. And we talked about Columbus Day coming and being here from 500 years ago and the terrorization that began and the trauma. But what I want to bring to you and let you know that this still exists today for our children in our rooms, in our classrooms. My son in kindergarten entered through those doors into the public school system with his wearing his And that broke my heart because I knew whatever was said, whatever was done, broke his heart that day. And I'm just pleading that this needs to be changed.
Thank you.
When you guys had these meetings, what were some of the main things people had to say about, you know, what was driving them to change this? I mean, it's obviously intergenerational, people doing it for their children, for the next generation. What was the most amazing quotes that you heard people say?
You know, one of the stories that really stuck with me, and I repeat often to especially legislators who I think have a hard time. You know, we talk about, we can give them all the statistics. So I really start from a place of, this is about ending state-sponsored celebration of genocide. And this is completely connected to other issues in our community, such as, you know, the high rates of missing and murdered Indigenous women, sexual assaults against Native Indigenous women, our high rates of youth suicide. To my mind, that's all part of the dehumanization of Indigenous peoples. But when you talk about it like that to a legislator, a policymaker, I don't know that they really understand what we're saying. And so it's in the stories that are so powerful. So one of the most powerful stories that really, I think, changed the hearts of many in that room was a mother that came up and shared how during this time of celebrating Christopher Columbus, she had a six-year-old that went to school with long hair, long braided hair down his back. And when he came back, he had cut off his braid. And she was devastated. And she, you know, what happened? And basically, the teacher was teaching about Christopher Columbus. She doesn't know exactly what was being said, but it was the way that this teacher explained Christopher Columbus and the exchange that he had with Indigenous peoples, he felt ashamed to be Indian. And he went under his desk with a pair of scissors and he cut off his braid. And he came back out and he says he doesn't want to be Indian anymore. So he went home that day and said, Mom, I don't want to be Indian. I just don't want to be that anymore. And so, you know, that happened in 2016. We're not talking about, a lot of times people say, get over it, stop being politically correct, it's just a holiday, who cares? But, you know, to them, I say, this is just one story. Now, times this by as many Indigenous children that we never get to hear from because we're very invisible. And what does that tell us about what we need to do? And I would go further to argue that this is not just about Indigenous children. You know, it's everybody in this society. Who are we lifting up as heroes? And I'm just in shock that it has taken so long for our collective consciousness to be raised to fight against celebrating somebody that is a well-documented slave trader, murderer, rapist. So I just feel like it's much overdue.
Hello, my name is Nishana Gomez. I'm chair of American Indian Studies here at UCLA. I come here today with a good mind. That is, I come with peace, awareness, and intent here. I want to say that we are not about anti-immigrant or anti-Italian, but not about celebrating intent to cause great harm. In our communities, we ban the rapist. So, just as it is taking work to obscure Indigenous people, it will take all of us to move forward from past harms. It is not about celebrating one version of history over all others, but addressing how we may come together as communities and recognize our relationship to this place as we build a future. We're all guests on tribal land. Invisibility has harmed Indigenous communities in material ways. We are the highest population who experience sexual violence, 1 in 3, incarceration, and extreme forms of violence outside our own racial groups. All too often these statistics are left out of reporting, however, even though in the social economic indicators, American Indian, Alaska Native often are at the lower rung. Stereotypes hurt all our children.
Same reasons. I'll say that one of the most active coalition members was Anahuac Olmecac, it's an Indigenous charter school and organization. And every time there was a hearing, their elementary through high school, they brought their young people, their students, to speak. Actually, for one of the hearings, they actually did a run. So they ran from their charter school all the way to Los Angeles City Hall to make sure that their voices were heard. And, you know, these children, 8 years old, 9 years old, you know, all the way into high school, they were so strong in their voices about appealing to the city council members to make this change. And, you know, they talked about the fact that Christopher Columbus is not a hero, and they no longer wanted the children of Los Angeles to be subjected to a false narrative that said that indigenous peoples weren't here on this continent, that this was a vacant land, because they're a living representation of the fact that people were here and had very sophisticated forms of governance, of which the supposed founders of this country borrowed from. So they were very, very sharp in their analysis about why this change needed to happen. And when you hear this coming from an 8 and a 9 year old, really admonishing the city council for not already acting, it really is a powerful statement.
And what do you think it was like for the youth, for the children to see this happen, to see the city council, the government, make a decision that would really change their schooling experience? I mean, and hopefully change what other students think of Columbus and perhaps of indigenous people.
I honestly, this makes me feel the best about this change, is the fact that these young people were, not that they were involved, they took leadership in this campaign, and they walk away feeling that they changed it, because they did change it, and they were not just a part of it, they were the change. So I'm very excited that there's a whole new generation of young people in not only LA City, but we just also won the change in the whole county of Los Angeles, and they were part of that change as well. And so I really believe that this future generation is going to look back on this experience and say, okay, what's next? What else can we change? You know, people are interested and excited about looking at the curriculum. You know, there are a number of different campaigns that the community is interested in. And I really believe that they're going to be leading the way for us.
So this is now, as you said, it's actually going to be over not just the city of Los Angeles, but the entire county. Which communities does this include outside of the city limits?
So LA County spans, I mean, it's large. It would be like the 40th largest state in the country. It's a huge geographic distance, 10 million people. I mean, anywhere from Malibu to Santa Monica to the Valley, San Fernando Valley, San Gabriel Valley, all the way down into the South Bay, South LA, you know, right up against Riverside. So this is in Palmdale, Antelope Valley. So this is a huge victory. I mean, I LA City took 2 years, and LA County, although we were working on it, it was like they all of a sudden, I think because LA City went ahead and made the change, we had a champion on the LA County Board of Supervisors that decided we need to get this done for the county before this next Indigenous Peoples Day. And so it was on a fast track, and it actually happened, the last leg of this, it happened very quickly. So we're excited about the domino. We're excited about the tipping point. Long Beach City also, you know, changed the day this last Tuesday. And then before that, Burbank City Council, these are all cities within LA County. City of San Fernando has already changed. You know, there are 88 cities in the county of Los Angeles. And, you know, we're expecting that many cities will follow.
So the city of Los Angeles changed it on August 30th, right? And this that county change just happened yesterday or the day before, right? Just a few days ago, from when we're speaking.
Yes, on October 3rd.
Mm-hmm. October 3rd. That's amazing. But what has the pushback been like? I mean, particularly from, what did you hear from city council members? What did you hear from the Italian American community?
So the pushback from the people in the Italian American community who oppose this, you know, they felt that something was being taken away from them. They felt that, you know, they looked up to this hero of Columbus because when they were coming into, you know, becoming American, that they were discriminated against. And this was the hero that helped them to feel like they were actually a part of this country. And so, you know, we saw a generational divide in the opposition of the Italian American community. You know, I will say that there were some Italian American community members that were completely on our side and wanted to see the change and did not believe that Columbus represented the best of Italian American culture, and they wanted to see the change. Those that opposed, again, they really conflated this man of Christopher Columbus with their own cultural pride and identity. And we worked really hard to try to separate out those two things to say that they're actually not the same. Christopher Columbus, you know, it wasn't until 400 years after he was born that Italy became a nation state. He was actually from, you know, the region, the province of Genoa, which, you know, again, was in Italy at the time he was alive. You know, he came over here as a result of the Spanish crown. So, you know, even the mythology about Christopher Columbus being Italian, you know, there was a lot to say there. You know, the other thing that the opposition shared was that Christopher Columbus was a man of his time. And so, you know, as we were raising all of these issues around Columbus being responsible for murder, rape, enslavement of young girls, for prostitution, slavery, sexual slavery, they never argued against any of his actions. And what they said, rather, was that he was a man of his time. Basically, their argument was everybody raped, tortured, and enslaved people, so we can't judge him on those things. But what we need to do is look at the positive side. We look at him and his spirit of exploration. And, you know, we balked at that. We said, no, absolutely not. I mean, how could you ask us to ignore these atrocities that happened? And how can we ignore the continuous impacts that lifting up figures such as him have on our community? And, you know, I would say that little by little, after hearing, you know, whereas the Italian American delegation that was very against this change was very large at the onset, after a number of meetings talking about why this is important to us, why this isn't just a symbol, why this really actually makes a difference and impact on what our experience is today, they started to drop off. After a meeting, they would come, you know, different members of their community would come up and say, I had no idea that this is how you felt about it. I had no idea that he committed these crimes. They only knew the positive side of Christopher Columbus.
So they've been celebrating. So you had these meetings with the Italian American community, with the Native American community, and they had no idea. They've been celebrating Columbus all these years, and for over 100 years, but they had never really learned a lot about him.
Right. That's exactly right.
I mean, a lot of this you can discover nowadays just by Googling his name.
That was some members, some of them. And then we stopped seeing them. So we felt like, okay, we changed their hearts and minds. They no longer feel like this is something that they, you know, vehemently opposed. So they sat it out. At least they were neutral about it. Some members of the Italian American community, regardless, despite hearing all of the trauma and all the whole history, their hearts and minds were not changed. I mean, the Knights of Columbus would stand up and say that everything we were saying about Christopher Columbus was false, and that, you know, we were making these things up, and wow, Christopher Columbus cannot be held responsible for genocide, which, you know, was because of disease and other issues. So, I mean, there was a spectrum in that community.
That's really shocking, because when you look at the history of the Caribbean and what happened there, he was direct. What he did is well documented. In fact, it was documented at the time. I mean, there were Spaniards who disagreed with what he oversaw there, you know, who were horrified by it. And it's very well documented. I mean, it's no question that what he led there in the Caribbean in particular was, you know, to the Tainu people, and was horrific. Absolutely. He made a hell on earth. It once meant a paradise.
And we used that. We read back his own diary and the diary of his crew to say, don't take our word for it. Here's what he said about the indigenous peoples he encountered, that they were the kindest people, that they would give you anything you asked for. And yet the way that he responded, I would say that, you know, we were a very human response of who are you? Let's welcome you in. Let's be kind to you. And the response was, oh, we can easily enslave you.
I am from El Salvador. And I migrated to this country 26 years ago. Hundreds of American Indians moved also from Central America. More than 200,000 people were killed in Guatemala. Most of them my share. You have here in Los Angeles hundreds of thousands of Central American indigenous people. Then I think it will be justified.
Thank you.
But 1 minute is not enough. Thank you, and I support this movement.
Thank you.
I mean, I just feel like that's the worst of humanity. How could we celebrate that? You know?
Yeah. I'm definitely interested in how these conversations are going to go. And in fact, I'm also going to have on the show two Native women who are beginning to have similar conversations with the Italian American community in Cleveland, Ohio.
America has a proud tradition as an immigrant nation, but it also has a long history of marginalizing those it marks as quote unquote other. America's other heritage includes suspicion, hostility, abuse, and even death leveled against ethnic groups as they arrived one after another in the waves over the past 2.5 centuries. We've forgotten the depth of prejudice and outright hatred faced by Italian Americans in this country. The type of prejudice and hatred experienced by Italians over 100 years ago has been replayed over and over for all immigrants and members of minority faiths everywhere in every historical period, including our own. This is why I find it ultimately important not to cure one offense with another. We must embrace Los Angeles, not divide it. How can we, on one hand, support the dignity and human rights of people, while on the other hand, replace one group's social inclusiveness for the sake of another? How is that fair and just?
I mean, I see that there was actually a proposal to actually have Indigenous Peoples Day on August 9th. That was rejected by an 11-4 vote. And that there was Councilman Mike Bonin, who is the great-grandson of Italian-American immigrants, he said that he argued that Columbus Day diminishes the accomplishments of his ancestors who came to the U.S. to build something and not to destroy something. What was that like, hearing that sort of dialogue?
It was very interesting. This whole process was very political. The council member, Joe Buscaino, was very, very entrenched and absolutely not supporting this change.
He was a first-generation Italian immigrant, wasn't he? Unlike, I'm reading that he was actually a first-generation Italian immigrant.
I hadn't realized that, actually, so yeah. Thank you for letting me know that. Perhaps that made a difference. But the opposition on the city council, there was a lot of conversation about concessions. You know, usually if a policy passes and there's strong opposition on both sides, that each side gives the other side, you know, some kind of concession so that there's not an absolute winner or, you know, it's not a black and white issue. On this issue, we were pushing the fact that this is black and white. This is, are you wanting to celebrate a man that represents genocide and all of these terrible things? Or are we actually actively trying to dismantle that? We pointed to race relations in the United States and said that, you know, in all of these conversations, usually indigenous peoples are left out. So here's your opportunity to do the right thing and to begin this conversation on race equity and healing and, you know, with indigenous peoples. And so we were asked, you know, many times would you all be willing to, and then it's like fill in the blank, you know, celebrate on another day, you know, maybe you can share that day and we could call it Diversity Day and it could be a day for everybody, you know. It was like there were so many ideas, and we just had to say, we talked about it as a coalition, and we agreed that it was going to be all or nothing, because we've waited so long for this and we could wait longer, and we were not going to concede and choose a different day. We had, you know, we had to create a whole argument and a whole, like, the last leg of the campaign was all about how we were not going to agree to the concession of having this on August 9th or any other day. They basically said, pick any other day except for the second Monday of October. And we said, no, you're missing the whole point here. So we really had to stand firm about that. And we were fortunate that everybody, you know, the majority of the city council members saw and understood. And really what our argument and, you know, what the truth is that Columbus Day is still a federal holiday. Our children still get these messages about this false narrative of Columbus during this time, you know, whether it's through television ads or newspaper, you know, ads, or what they hear in schools is just permeated throughout our society. And so we're really working to actively counter those negative stereotypes and diminishing and dehumanizing stereotypes, and really lifting up what's beautiful about our people, what we've so much that we've contributed and continue to contribute. And so to have it on any other day completely missed the point. I think it's very cowardly. It's like you don't really want to address this issue. You want to try to make everybody happy. And that luckily the city council was, you know, stood up and I believe made the right decision.
And you mentioned that, when we had talked earlier, you had mentioned about the whole, that the Italian-American community had brought up these ideas about the Columbian exchange that went on. And many things in America are named after, you know, are named after Columbus, including the capital of our country. And I live here in Oregon, and the Columbia River is another one. Explain to me how you addressed this the way Columbus is taught, the way he's sort of deeply woven into what children in the United States learn about who we are, and this whole idea of exploration, this sort of way of looking at our encounter with Columbus.
So, you know, this whole process, there was a lot of good that came out of it, one of which I believe was the education to our local elected officials about who we are as a community, the fact that we're not a homogenous community, but that we have so much diversity, depending on, you know, where our peoples come from, when we came to Los Angeles, if we were indigenous to Los Angeles. I mean, we just had such a diverse, you know, group of community members and activists, part of our coalition, that we talked about all of those nuances and differences. And I don't believe that the city council member had ever had this kind of opportunity to learn about who we are and the history, even of the place that we occupy now. You know, many of them didn't realize that this is indigenous land. The indigenous peoples of Los Angeles are the Tongva and the Tatavium and the Chumash. And I believe that it raised the consciousness of the local elected officials about indigenous issues. And, you know, as far as the opposition pointing to the merits of Columbus, one of the things they often pointed to, and they actually had a stack of probably a 20-page handout that they would give about all of the goods that were, traded as a result of the Columbian Exchange that we would not have otherwise. And they list people in there. And so they're, you know, so the exchange of people and goods. And we're like, okay, exchange of people is code word for slavery. So I don't know if you want to take credit for that, you know. but there were all of these coded ways that they would talk about the merits of Columbus that we had to go back and then refute, you know, like this idea of the fact that he was an explorer and he was an adventurous explorer. And that's, you know, the fabric of American society, and we need to lift that up. And we'd say, okay, you know, you want to call him an explorer, as if he had like a, you know, set of binocular set, or like it was so innocuous. It was so kind and polite, and it was not that. You know, this is, he's a representation of the worst parts of the colonization of in the history of this country. And so every time they'd come, you know, with a framing, and, you know, it's difficult at first, because that's in what their opposition's messaging and what they were saying is in alignment with everybody learns in school. So this whole process for us was really working to help people unlearn, whether conscious or unconscious, the messages that they receive about how this country was founded, and, you know, actually convincing people that we have facts on our side. You know, people wanted to see our sources. I mean, our fact sheet, we had to list all of our sources, which is fine. But, you know, they didn't find us credible when we would tell them about these atrocities. They didn't at first believe that this actually happened.
Really?
Right.
That's pretty shocking that they don't know. I thought that most people at this point in time knew these basic facts about Columbus, yet they, part of what allowed them to continue, were they resistant to it, or have they just did not know?
They just did not know. And I think they were just skeptical about, you know, hearing things like, you know, all of the atrocities, you know, that Columbus and his crew committed. They would just ask, like, okay, well, what are your sources, and how do you know this? You know, questions like that. I mean, I'd also, you know, link this whole celebration of Columbus to the dehumanization that we still experience around race-based mascots, and, you know, shared that the American Psychological Association has come out against, you know, race-based mascots as an aggression to Native youth, and that they create a hostile learning environment in schools, not only for Native children, but for all children. And that my argument is that, you know, based on that study, we can say the same for the dehumanization that we feel around the time of Christopher Columbus, you know, and so I basically link that to the fact that we have such high youth suicide rates and a lot of other, you know, negative outcomes. And I was asked to provide the study. You know, it's like, oh, can you give me that study? I would like to see that. So, you know, we continuously got fact checked, which is fine. But, you know, the opposition could, you know, just, you know, print out all of these reports. And because it was consistent with the dominant narrative, I don't think they got the same, you know, questions to them. I think it's so true, is that the common, you know, mainstream ideology out there is that we were uncivilized, that we, you know, and I mean, I taught Indian 101 at UCLA, American Indian Studies, Introduction to American Indian Studies, and I had a session where I said, ask any question, no question is dumb, and I was actually traumatized. I didn't do that again. But some of the students there, I mean, this is, you know, many years ago, but some of the students are asked their real questions, which was, you know, well, isn't it a good thing that they came, because they came to save your souls? And isn't it a good thing? Because yes. And I was just shocked that when you let people really say what they're, you know, what are your questions? What are your beliefs? I'm pretty shocked to hear what's really on people's minds. And I don't actually fault those people. They're ignorant. You know, they just haven't been taught. I fault the systemic ways that people are miseducated, and I think it's very purposeful that people don't know the true history of this land. So, you know, I think as we look to people who have trailblazed before, if we look at the example of Minnesota or of Washington, you know, we're also looking at how do we create more systemic ways of making sure that we no longer have to be invisible, and we don't have to continue to fight against this ignorance, but that, you know, all peoples in the public school systems are required to understand the histories of their land as it pertains to Indigenous peoples and the history of Indigenous peoples in their state. And so our community in LA anyways is starting to turn their attention to looking at curriculum change, and there's a whole list of leaders that have been working on that in California for a very long time that we're seeking to join in that effort. So no, I just wanted to say that, you know, I really did not understand the magnitude of, you know, people talk about narrative change work. And with this change, after the change, the actual day of the vote, you know, many of us were swept into a press room, and we went into a press room to address the press. And there were, I don't know, more cameras than I've ever spoken to, at least 15 cameras lined up from so many different news stations in Los Angeles. And, you know, we continued to get, you know, interviewed and stories written from national publications. And I mean, GQ for, you know, the Glamour magazine, like these are publications that have a much wider audience, I think, than we're usually used to having an audience with. And I had no idea that this was going to become a national story. And I think it speaks to this national moment we're in, where it's white supremacy, white nationalism is so apparent and irrefutable that that exists. And this is, you know, people picking the story up to say that even amidst this climate, and especially because we're in this climate, that these victories mean so much more. And that our allies, you know, we had a lot of allies in other communities, you know, that they try to pit the immigrant rights community against us. At one point, one of the city council members made a recommendation that the second Monday of October is celebrated as an Immigrant People's Day. And we quickly, you know, called our friends in the immigrant community, and they said, absolutely not. So they sent letters, they called the city council members, they said, you know, this isn't anything that we support. You know, how is it going to look if you pass this and the immigrant community is against the immigrant day, you know? Mm-hmm. So we have had so much support, and we've had so much more national attention than we ever imagined. We were doing this for our children, you know, and we continue to do it for our children. But I think that a win that we didn't expect is this larger contribution to changing the narrative of how people talk about Indigenous peoples throughout the country. And I think that, you know, started way back. I mean, I think South Dakota, you know, made this change in the 90s as a state. Minnesota several years ago, and then Washington. And I think as we all continue to make this change in our respective communities, and this comes up in conversation both locally and nationally, I feel like we're changing that mainstream narrative that, again, I think is much overdue.
Great. Thank you so much. And like I said, I look forward to hearing what else the LA Native community is going to do next.
Thank you.
So with that said, Madam Clerk, would you please open the roll? Close the roll and tabulate the vote.
40 ayes, 1 no.
Mr. O'Farrell, do you want to forthwith on this item? So basically what happened, the report from the Rules Committee was approved as amended.
Just heard a pre-recorded podcast from Jackie Keeler, the podcast I'm Not Your Disappearing Indian, which can be found on SoundCloud and iTunes. So let's talk about it. Carrie, do you have any reflections on what you've just heard? Tell me your thoughts about these symbols of reconciliation.
Yeah, so I know there's always a tension point regarding whether or not symbolic gestures like this make a real difference for our people. I remember the first time I wrestled with this myself on this issue in 2004 when I was living in Olympia, Washington. I was able to attend the exoneration of Chief Leshai, who represented Nisqually and Puyallup tribes at the Medicine Creek Treaty Council of December 26, 1854, which ceded to the United States large portions of the Seattle-Tacoma-Olympia area. Amidst some conflict, some territorial militiamen were killed, and authorities blamed the killings on Leshai. He was executed in 1858. Fast forward to 2004, Chief Leschi was exonerated by the Washington State Legislature, and I was able to attend the ceremonial exoneration. So at that time, I wondered about the value of an action like this, given the myriad tangible challenges that our community members need to be addressed now. So over time, I've come to the conclusion that we need both. If we see tangible progress and ignore history and keep the status quo in name, I think that sends a message to our people, just as much as symbolic gestures like Chief Leschi's exoneration or Indigenous Peoples Day taking the place of Columbus Day simply as lip service. So it's not an either or situation, but a both and.
I love that. I think you're so right. It's a both and there's something to be said about the delivery. Lely Long Soldier, a citizen of the Oglala Lakota Nation, wrote an incredible poem titled Whereas, which touches on a congressional resolution of apology to Native Americans, which President Obama signed in 2009. In this particular instance, had no known Native Americans present, and most never knew that there was an apology made. And she touches on how an apology is delivered. And I'd love to read an excerpt from Whereas. This is part of it. Whereas, when offered an apology, I watch each movement, the shoulders high or folding, tilt of the head, both eyes down or straight through me. I listen for cracks in knuckles or in the word choice. What is it that I want? To feel, and mind you, I feel from the senses. I read each muscle. I ask the strength of the gesture to move like a poem. Expectations, a terse arm fold, a failing noun thing. I scold myself in the mirror for holding.
Powerful stuff. Thank you so much for sharing that. So I'd also like to take this opportunity to mention that Portland City Council will make a proclamation for Native American Heritage Month at next week's City Council meeting Wednesday morning. I believe it will take place at 9:45 a.m., but the exact time will be up on the Portland City Council agenda website very soon. Do you have any final thoughts on Native American Heritage Month and what people can keep in mind going forward?
I think that just thinking about the context and always continuing these conversations, I feel like we'll talk more about this and have other topics to discuss. And so,
agreed. Beautiful. Well, thanks for tuning in to Native Voices from the Edge. We'll be back next week, as Amory said, to discuss local events and issues with some very special guests. I'm Carrie Waters.
And I'm Amory Shack. Our engineer is John Shuck. Thanks, John. Stay tuned for Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know.
Good morning. It's 8:57. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Press Watch is next. Teresa Mitchell welcomes back Rolling Stone journalist Matt Taibbi and his new book, I Can't Breathe, A Killing on Bay Street. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. Flashpoints is coming up at 10:15. Investigative News Radio with Dennis Bernstein at 11 o'clock. Fight the Empire is on at 9:30. This morning? Yeah, Fight the Empire on at 9:30 after Air Cascadia. Then at 10:15, it's Flashpoints. At 11 on Between the Covers, author Elizabeth Fournier discusses her book, The Green Reaper, Memoirs of an Eco-Mortician. And at 11:30, Black Book Talk speaks to author William Hayashi and his sci-fi trilogy, Dark Side, that tells the story of a group of African-American scientists who beat Neil Armstrong to the moon. KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get involved by going to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. It's 8:58.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Robin Jackson Portland album release with The Call-In Trio on November 11th at 9 p.m. at the Secret Society in Portland. Award-winning singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist Robin Jackson is releasing his second solo record that draws upon the moody spirit of his rain-soaked Portland home to create an eclectic brew of dreamy folk pop, cinematic indie rock, and enigmatic storytelling. The Call-In Trio will also be featured. Again, that's the Robin Jackson Portland album release with The Call-In Trio on November 11th at 9 p.m. at the Secret Society 116 Northeast Russell Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, this is Nicole Martin, KBOO's sound artist in residency. I am personally inviting you to the Threshold Shift audio party happening Monday, November 6th from 6:30 to 8 o'clock p.m. at KBOO Studios on 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon. We'll be celebrating all things audio, including the wrap of the Threshold Shift Sound Artist in Residency project, where you'll have a chance to meet the artist as well as the folks at the KBOO Studios who helped make it possible. We're also going to launch the Portland chapter of the Listening Lounge, an informal audio collective of sound enthusiasts that meets monthly to have a potluck and share audio that catches our ears, maybe doesn't have a project that fits it yet, or could use a fresh listen. So feel free to bring friends, ideas, and your enthusiasm for sound. No experience necessary. For more information, you can visit the Threshold Shift program page at kboo.fm.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know.